Yeah, man.
Big old shock of black hair.
Hold on, let me get you
most
back.
Beautiful face you ever saw.
Yeah.
Thank you. And we enjoyed the two boys. They seem just to come on in and
give
sit down and make themselves, you know, make themselves at home. It doesn't seem to bother them at all. As you say about sitting down at somebody's table, it doesn't bother them at all. They're pretty hard to eat.
Florence,
yes,
let me tell you what happened. They came in right after dinner, and after a while we were sitting out there, and Bertie said she heard something down there. What in the world was that? And I had heard it too, but I hadn't noticed it. It was just, you know how you hear things and don't know it? Well, sir, the next thing, it happened right over there, and I knew what it was. It was a rain crow. There was a pair of them. And that was the very first I'd heard the whole year. And they brought them, you see. Brought them. Well, Cookie came over that night for his birthday party. And we all sitting out there. And that's when we had that hail and that 2 or 3 inch rain.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you talk about something working. That rain crow really worked in a hurry, didn't it?
A woodpecker.
Yeah, he's
handsome.
He's
good looking bird.
I can tell woodpeckers from the red head.
Almost pileated.
No.
Yeah.
Not quite.
No.
A little small.
Wrong coloring, too.
Now, you've got, you don't have rain crows?
No, we don't see crows very much in the yard at all.
It's not a crow, it's a rain crow.
Or any kind of crow.
It's not a crow.
Not a crow?
It's a cuckoo.
Cuckoo?
Yeah.
No.
But anyhow.
Cuckoo bird?
No. I shouldn't say that because I don't know what they sound like, and I may have them and don't know it.
Yeah.
You know, just like a lot of things.
Well, you see, I'm trying to show them how you talk. You see, that mine is the countryside. I bring it up. She pick up the ordinarily. She picked that up and say what you did have.
Well, we seem to be
so
overcome with all kinds of doves, and we have an awful lot of cooing around.
Yeah.
It sounds sort of sad.
Yeah, morning
dove. And maybe sometimes, especially certain times of day, it's sort of like a train going through, you know.
All it does.
You know, at night you hear a train going,
that
always sounds sort of lonesome.
Yeah.
And if you're going along and it's hot and sunny, you don't notice it too much. But late in the evening, if you go out and you hear them, and you usually do, anytime you go out, you'll hear them.
Yeah.
You know, always sound kind of sad.
On the ground.
That P-Cubby quail, I think, up north.
What's that? I can't hear you.
Up along our road, P-Cubby quail. About 11 apiece.
You're not sitting up.
That's a good sized cub.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Dale is coming along.
Wait a minute.
Excuse me, go ahead.
P-Cubby quail.
Throw your voice up more. You don't have to talk loud, just throw your voice. Yeah, I've talked loud, just show your voice. Come on.
They're about P-Cubby quail.
That's about it.
Up on our road, about, I think they're 12 and 1, 11 and the other.
You see them all the time?
No. I see them about 3 times.
That's unusual. That number of quails.
We just got one old bob of life, that's all I know.
Dale was commenting last night that doves were migratory birds.
Are they?
And,
so crows.
Mm-hmm.
Is crows a migratory bird now? We've got a limited season on them.
That's why Chuck calls doves a federal bird. Because they're migratory and cross state boundaries.
Yeah.
Well, why do you see them? Well, they stay around. They think the pair we have seems to stay around.
Well,
I only know one pair.
That's what Dale was mentioning. That all he says he thinks that right around where we live, that there are a lot of them that just stay there all year round and aren't migratory.
Yeah.
Because we keep seeing the same, we think they're the same doves. And several same old blue jays, and we don't think they go anywhere. We think they just stay with us all year. We're the same way with the quail. Yeah.
Do the blue jays perform for you?
Yes, they do. They try to be master of the dogwood tree. They think it belongs to them. And the only ones that give them a hard time are the squirrels.
Mm-hmm.
Squirrels will fuss with them. They always beat the birds out, other birds out. So now we have one bird feeder that belongs to the cardinals and one that belongs to the blue jays. They sort of segregated.
Separate but equal.
They gotta stay on the ground, and what spills out. Mm. All the squirrels.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Brent watches the antics of the squirrels out there pretty much.
Good thing, getting all sorts of trouble out there. See them holding on to the front and back feet on the edge of the pool leaning over to get drink water.
Yeah.
They haven't fallen in yet. No, and they hang on their back feet.
Hang upside down on the limbs and try to get food out of the bird feeder.
But that blue jay, he does perform.
Well, they fuss a lot, and they just seem to want to run all the rest of the birds off, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
They'll come in.
You're not a follower of the blue jay.
No, I watch them mostly out in just one tree.
Yeah.
They seem to think it belongs to them.
Yeah.
And they carry on out in that one tree all day long, and it's sort of a fight between the blue jays and the squirrels, and that's pretty much what I watch.
Well, let me tell you why.
Tell me, what do you see?
I see. Up there in Knoxville, you see, we had that big cedar like this one outside the kitchen window, and those blue jays, what they would do, they would be out there making a lot of rockets, and then they would come on up there and make a lot of rockets. And when they hit that feeding station, they would just hit it with them feet so hard it would make the feed fly. And then they would look around to see if anybody was looking, so they could just steal it. They didn't want to just get ordinary food, they wanted to steal it. And I didn't realize that a blue jay has a pouch. I learned that a lot later. But they could stay there and just steal it and put it in that pouch and carry a large amount of them. In other words, while they were up there, I thought they were eating, but they weren't. They were storing it.
Well, maybe this is what's going on in that dogwood tree. They don't seem to be eating out of the feeder too much as they are, as I say, just kind of fussing. You know, they'll get on the ground, and a squirrel will run up there, and then they'll jump up, and then a squirrel runs down. And they keep exchanging places from the ground to the tree.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one feeder. But I don't really see them eating that much.
He has so many voices. He talks, he's got so much language that he can use. And ordinarily, Mark Twain said, that blue jay on, that's what the blue jay was interested in. He just wanted to see if everybody's looking at him. He's a great performer. Now, how that works out with squirrels, I don't know. I don't think anything works with squirrels. Squirrels are such engineers, they sort of dominate the scene.
I don't think they seem to beat the blue jays out. They're just about even out there.
Yeah.
And they're the only ones that will stick together for a long period of time to kind
of stretch
it out.
The blue jays stick together?
They stick right with the squirrels. The other birds will leave. When
they try to
be king of the roost, you know.
Oh.
And the other birds will take off. Except the doves kind of ignore the blue jays. They just walk kind of a broad boundary around them. And then when the blue jay leaves, he comes in.
They talk about a blue jay being mean. I think a cardinal is mean that way. I'm meaner than a blue jay. I've never seen a blue jay fight. I've seen them make a lot of noise. But I've never seen
a nice. We had a cardinal that would bite on the window on the truck.
Yeah. Yeah. He didn't want that fella to be around there, did he? Mm-hmm. It was his territory.
Could y'all tell him about that one beat he had over there at the ranch?
That's the one.
Tell me about it.
I think beat himself up, taking on the
mirror, wasn't
mirror.
It?
Yeah. Yeah, they hurt themselves.
He would keep, they would fly through the truck, wasn't it?
They would fly through the garage, probably see that.
And every day, I understand, he'd go and look at himself and beat his mirror on his truck and peck at it.
Mm-hmm.
He stayed there for a long time.
That mirror is filled with a lot of comfort.
Mm-hmm.
Company, of course.
Mm-hmm. We had a glass window right in front of my sink over the ranch some long time ago, and there was a mockingbird that would come and hit into that glass window. And this happened every year, and he wouldn't really injure himself, but he would act like he was trying to peck something off of it, and he would do it for months at a time. And every year he came back for, I'd say, like 5 years, 14,
mm-hmm.
4 and 5 years, and then finally disappeared.
I feel sorry for the birds with our windows on our cabin up in the mountains. There are two windows like this, you know, in the corner of the building, and we're on the top of the hill. So the birds will come across the valley just as fast as they can fly, and I guess they think that they can see through those two windows. I think that's what it is, because they'll fly right into one of them. And I've gone out there and picked up little warbler that tried to make it through there, and he knocked himself out.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't kill him. It just he was stunned,
mm-hmm.
and I held him in my hands and kept him warm for a few minutes, and after a while he flew on.
Well, this one didn't seem to injure himself at all. He just would go. He would do it off and on all day long. He'd sort of sit on the ledge and then just jump up at the window and just peck it. Just this one window, nowhere else.
He must be a reflection there.
Whether he thought that was his friend and came back to see him every year, and it was himself.
Now, guys, see these armadillos around here, and I thought they were pretty scarce.
You know, when I was a little girl, they were. And I remember my granddaddy, you know, getting us out just to see an armadillo.
Mm-hmm.
And one was on the road one time, was killed by a car.
Mm-hmm.
And it has a picture of that armadillo holding it by the tail with a pair of pliers. I was about Jancy's age at the time. And now these people are out hunting them at night, you know, to try to get rid of them.
Well,
they undermine the houses. They go underneath the, especially these wooden frame houses. You know, they dig tunnels underneath.
They went under the house at the ranch. Had a whole litter of them under the little frame house.
Mm-hmm. It was really funny. They used to get out early in the morning. You know, they can't smell you. You know, and they don't see too well either. You know, have you ever noticed on the highway? Well, one reason why they get killed is because they stand on their back feet. You know, they have to kind of smell around. They get hit that way, and so you can walk right on them, you know, and they don't unless they happen to catch
they just curl up.
Well, they don't see you and they don't smell you either, so you get pretty close to them sometimes. And one morning I saw one going by the window at the ranch, and I thought, I'm going to go out and take a closer look. You remember that? We went out there and there were seven at the corner of the house, all playing out there in the yard. Seven armadillos out there in the yard,
borting
around.
And that was before you got up.
It was about a little bit before breakfast. Mm-hmm. And one got under the garage and has seen it underneath that. Do you remember that one, Brent? It had a great big hole down there.
Dow hit a scrape at night.
Got under Dow's bedroom floor. He'd move around half. Good thing Dow wasn't afraid.
Wasn't it? Since
he's
starting to go to sleep, and you hear all that commotion going on under your bed.
Mm-hmm. And the one out on the playhouse had a great big tunnel way under its wooden floor. And you could take a light and look underneath there and see the babies.
Your granddaddy wasn't, he didn't handle animals, and it's the greatest thing. He didn't care. It was all vomit to him.
Oh, no. He, in fact, I grew up with wild animals pretty much. He was always.
I see what he used. He picks up those things.
Bringing in things. He'd bring in little baby rabbits from the field for me.
Yeah. Now that's the countryside.
He had a possum.
Great ease.
Possum, sometimes, but. He brought a skunk one time. He had D-musk for
and
him.
And you can't shut him up, you see.
Yeah, That's the size you get. Yeah.
Say it again. That's nice.
Well, he had a big skunk, and he said it'd make a good pet, so he had it demuffed for me.
Yeah.
And it was a real, real tame animal. Run all, you know, just like a house cat. And I have he let me have a little white mouse one time. Had orange eyes. Mm-hmm. And you know, nowadays people wouldn't look too kindly upon it, but he was just as tame as he could be. Called him Pinky. Why? I guess his eyes looked pink and orange at the same time. And he would come up and run up around back of my neck, you know, and down my arm. That sounds kind of creepy. And he would go in the wood pile, and he knew me just as well as anything. And I'd go out and I'd call Pinky, 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 and he'd come around the wood pile and come play with me. And we were at my grandparents at the time. All of us lived together, and he didn't seem to mind. He gave me a little pig one time, a little T-90 one. I nursed it with a bottle, sort of a mess. And I think he got to digging up all my grandmother's flowers, and he just sort of disappeared. But, they said, all right. He had gone out to visit an uncle.
You said
come and visit with us. So we had a lot of animals. We had a lot of animals over at the ranch, too.
Ooh, cats.
Cats.
What's the matter, Brent? Cats.
I had a shoe rack in her closet, the bedroom. And it's got the regular closet floor, and it's got the box coming up to hold the sheets that she's on. She kept on hearing something scratching up under there and making noise at night. Finally took that thing off, and there's a cat with a litter kitten.
Crawled up through the wire, you know where the wire space is? There was a fuse box up there, and the hole wasn't but just very, very tiny. And how the cat got in, we don't know.
Especially with kittens.
Well, she had them in there. I think she got through there some way and had the kittens in there. But one of them died.
Mm-mm.
And if we didn't have a time, we had to take the floor up. Do you remember that?
Yeah, but your granddaddy, he was an exception. He was nobody. People just didn't care for animals, and unless it was horses or cows or hogs or something.
Oh, he liked animals, especially wild ones. He didn't call them. You know, he thought they made good pets. And as far back as I can remember, if I couldn't tell for sure whether he brought them to me or whether they were partly for him, but we always had a cage with some kind of an animal in it the whole time I was growing up.
Yeah.
Usually a wild one.
You know, that one of those mates' cats out there is about to have kittens.
Yeah.
Those are nice cats.
Yeah.
Why do you call them nicer than the ones we had at the ranch, Brent?
They don't scratch you.
We
had you had to watch out for.
We had one litter we had over at the ranch. One little cat was just as black as could be, and he had these wild looking eyes. And from the time he was 3 days old, I do believe you could start to put your hand on that cat, and he just hissed at you like he was just as wild and mean as he could be. Do you remember him, Brent?
Yeah,
and his hair felt different than the others. It was real stiff. And he stayed there and nursed that same mother. The other cats weren't like that. And he grew up to be just like a wild cat, and we were never, ever able to even get within a foot or two of him. And once in a while I got my hand on him, he still had that real wiry feel to his hair. I don't know what happened.
We supposed to have one by the name of Cece. Crazy cat. Climb up the window, screen door, look through the windows on the big front door, and look inside. And we also had a chihuahua that when we got home, we leaned over on its stomach, roll over, and scratch its stomach. And that cat started doing that too.
He started acting like the dog.
Or do they learn from each other? It seems to me that animals do.
Well, we wondered about that, because this crazy cat that he was talking about, you could start across the yard, and you know how a dog will run and then stop. And then run again after you.
Yeah.
That's the way the puppy would do.
Mm-hmm.
And the cat started doing the same thing.
Yeah.
instead of just kind of trailing along behind you like a lot of cats do. Well, he would run and stop and run and stop. And he'd get up on the car and walk along and look through the window at you all the time. That's why they called him Crazy Cat, because he thought he was a people or a dog, right. And he wasn't real sure that he was a cat.
We have two dogs, and one of them is about 4 years younger than the other. And we noticed that the young one will watch the older dog and take her lead from the older dog.
Hmm.
And it now that she's grown, well, she's familiar with most situations, so she gets along all right. But if she's in a really different situation, she'll look to the older dog to see how she's supposed to behave. And it only takes her a short lesson, and then she fits into whatever situation she's in. It's been an education to me just to watch that dog learn from the older.
Do you suppose that cat was learning from the puppy?
I don't know, but I guess so. Could be.
Well, we don't know. Uh-huh. We have a crazy cat now, too. We call him Pouncer. Because he plays by himself all the time. He thinks he's a lion or something. Yeah. He has since he's a little baby. He would get behind Larry Oak, you know, and wouldn't be a thing out there. And then all of a sudden, it was just like he was watching something, and he was fixing to attack. And then he would pounce over the bushes. Wouldn't be anything there. He'd do it all day long. And you can go out and
mighty
you'd be planting. Yeah, he was a mighty hunter. And you go out and be planting in the yard, and the first thing you know, something would pounce on you. But it was because something was moving. And he's the same one I was telling you about that day that would sit out there and watch the birds and watch the squirrels, just like he was just as a great hunter again, fixing to attack on him. He never catches anything. Never. I don't think he really wants to. It's just like when he was little. He's not a vicious cat or anything. And people say, well, you can't have birds in this cat, too. But the birds don't seem to bother that cat.
Like well, when you were over there at Simonton, all those neighbors of yours down that hill, they were hard on your cats and everything else.
Well, they had a lot of dogs down there.
Yeah.
And quite a few cats, too. They were kind of like we were. They were overcome with cats.
Yeah.
But they didn't. The dogs were the ones, I think, that bothered them. I think that's what kept them a little while.
The boys didn't get after the cats themselves?
Not too much, no. They seemed, putting it in a racial situation, but most niggers seem to like animals that I can tell, and they lots of times about as kind to them as they are their children, and they would seem to bother. They like cats, you know.
And they're pretty.
And they're usually pretty good to them. In fact, they even feed them pretty good, and you'll notice their dogs very often will be just as fat as can be.
They
don't mind.
Their children?
All you have. Well, yes and no. If you go down to Boardman, and there are all kind of cats down there. Dogs too, just all over.
Well, I'm talking about those children down there, those growing
they
up.
They're fairly kind to them.
To the children?
Well, according to which family you're talking about, Mary's kind to her children.
Yeah.
But Charles and didn't take too good care of him.
Yeah, you see, they're showing you offline.
Yeah.
Now you see how restful, that's what I find the countryside. They're open to suggestion. And you see with the learned people, they always get me in a corner with suggestions. I mean, they just fire them at me. You see, nothing is quite so slay you quite so quick as a bunch of questions. And you see, the countryside doesn't do that. So that's one reason, you see, I feel such relief when I talk to the countryside. They switch and I have those infernal questions.
Well, maybe they all are just telling you that maybe they all like to talk about what they're doing, so they're not asking you questions so much as they are.
They don't want me to talk anymore.
Talking? No.
Well, I don't want to.
You know, more and more about this bragging business that you mentioned one time.
Yeah.
I've watched that more and more that I've talked to the old timers.
Yeah.
Who around the country.
Yeah.
And I find that Miss Pierce, this elderly lady I was talking about, is forever telling me what somebody thinks, and it's, you can't take it as really bragging in a sense that I'm great or that I think I'm better than anybody else. That sense, but I don't know whether it's to make herself feel worse or whether she's just happy about the fact that people feel this way about her. You know, you don't know why they do it. And I didn't pay close attention to it until you brought it up one time about this bragging. But she does it constantly. And yet she's one of the most humble people you'd ever want to know.
Yeah.
But she said the other day, she says, "Do you know what somebody said about me?" And she starts on, she's 82, and she's sewing again steadily. In fact, she's making this Baptist preacher, Jean Keith's daughter's wedding gown and all the bridesmaids' dresses. Can you imagine that with all the pearls and all on it at 82? And she was, you know, going to report to me that someone heard that dressmaker was back in town, Roberta Pierce, and that no one could sew and make dresses like Roberta Pierce, and you couldn't see a single stitch when she got through, and you could turn it inside and out, and you couldn't find those stitches, and it was just as good inside as outside.
You know, that's almost a model boat, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's almost a model boat. Now, what that's supposed to do is take you into the stitching. Does she go ahead then with the stitching?
He will, just at the drop of a hat.
If you give her the green light.
She'll tell you about all the different things she's made, and she's made something for everyone you can believe. You know, we were going down to the recital Friday night, and she saw this sign on the road, Blockers, you know. She said, "You know that Blockers sign up there? I used to sew for that Mrs. Blocker when her husband ran Wilson's department store. And her son is older than I am, this Miss Blockred. And she said, I used to make some clothes for her." She remembers all of them.
She knows all the history of the people around.
And she keeps up with them. Yeah. And she
now, you know, the
amazing
thing is, you see, Florence gets around with everybody, intelligent people, all of them. People, those colored boys down for that long Simonson hill over there. But she still, you know, she can talk any way she wants to, learn it and all like that, but she talked easy. And how she possessed that, I don't know, because she got all the pressures on her, everybody else had. And I thought once she got to town, she'd lose it all. But she didn't lose it exactly. I'm sure she's changed, you know. She talks more than she used to.
You moved into town, Fly?
Yes, we moved in about 4 years ago. But he'd sort of programmed me that my life was just going to be sort of sterile up there. But you know, there's always somebody coming by. It's just like, you know,
she don't know care whether it's a cat or a turtle dove.
Not too much, but you know, just sort of happenstance occasionally.
Yeah.
It's just like we were getting our aerial down this year, and I had a cat. I didn't know the phone asked me to come out and tell me about getting the aerial off.
Now, you see, there's a good deal in this. You see, there's a tolerance there that Miss Mary would have. She's not choosy. You see, that same tolerance. She don't care whether it's a polecat or a skunk she don't care. I don't know what that is. It's an ease. You see, anything that comes up is part of it, isn't it? You don't know. She don't know. You see, she just does it. She got that culture. Now the thing of it is, you were in that culture for so long.
Still is.
I still am.
Well, yes, but I mean, when you grew up in it from your time, you're just a child, baby.
Yes. I lived in the country always, except for very little time.
And furthermore, you were right there in the kitchen, that restaurant kitchen.
Either one or the other. I grew up sort of in a compound when I was real small. You know, I mentioned my grandparents lived together, but the whole family lived together, and they all got along well. There were six children. And they had a big restaurant and a grocery store and a big warehouse. He was a pecan dealer. And a tourist court, and it took all the family to run everything. And all the boys were good cooks, but they did other things too. Like if he had a truck of pecans to go north, well, they would take them north. And if it was time to grade pecans, that's what they did. And the girls would help in the restaurant. They would help in the grocery store. No one seemed to mind being shifted from one thing to another.
And they had a lot of things to talk about, too. They could talk about the country, they could talk about cooking.
It didn't matter much.
It was, as I told him, it was sort of really, you know, talk about kinder compound. Ours wasn't elegant like that, but it was a compound because we had so many there. We had to have a washhouse. Place I spent a great deal of time. So there were about four women washing all the time just to keep up with the laundry.
See, I found that out. I've seen enough of that to know that these things that you learn, if you get it from the culture, it's an entirely different matter than what you somebody tell you. Now, that 15th of August, you see, when these flatheads were all in here and sitting around the table. And Debbie was here, and she wasn't in on it. Mm. She hadn't been in on it before. She's just a visitor. But Suzanne was here, and Suzanne's one of the finest of the talkers. She just takes to it. And Debbie picked it up from her and went home, started writing, talking. Of course, it was part of her culture. A certain type of it was a part of her culture. Anyhow, you see, they gabbed all the time up there. But nothing like that. She picked it up. It don't matter. Just from being here, you see.
Well, I spent a great deal of time with Negroes when I was growing up. I sort of regret the fact that our young people today don't have this opportunity in the same way that I had.
Yeah.
My children had it. My older ones did. And Jancy, the baby, did a little bit because I had this very fine old woman to keep her when she was small. And she still remembers her food when we go out to see her. But, you know, years ago there was always some around that could bounce you on their knee or show you how to cook something, tell you different kinds of stories or sing to you. And this generation isn't getting that at all. No, they seem to be oriented toward making
minimum wage has done away with it.
Done away with it. Our older children are very thankful they had it, and they realize that it's gone because it's not in our house anymore.
That's right. They had a touch of it.
They had a very strong touch of it when they were small. You see how we grew up with that bunch over there on the ranch. All of them are gone now.
Yeah.
There's no one there.
All split up
and gone.
Yeah.
I'm still in contact with part of the youngest ones though. One that was just a baby, that born when we were over there, and he still comes, and so does the girl come and help me sometimes.
Yeah.
Mhm. He stutters real bad, and he's not too bright. But he
she doesn't have any charge.
Good attitude.
Mm-hmm. I talk. I'm always charged. And you see, the mind works just as well without a charge. And my mind won't work without a charge.
Maybe mine's just kind of running off on old battery.
you see the mentality, the different mentality. And you see, she can look at it, and they can't. If I bring that up with Miss Mary, you know, she'd go home.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing that education does. You hold still and look at things like this.
Yeah. Well, we try to keep this talking at home as much as possible, around the table at night. Because that's what I grew up
with.
That's
fun.
My granddad, you reported to my granddaddy at 6 o'clock in the morning because that was his hour.
Yeah.
And he would go in and just, in fact, they would call us fussing because we were kind of rough on Brent getting out of bed. Dow goes in there and says, okay, up and at him, get your feet on the floor, you know. And he's the one that shoves him out and crosses you a little rough there. And I said, he's not rough. He should have been around when my granddaddy was around. Yeah, I bet he put cold water on you.
Oh, really?
Dead of winter and no heat, he'd pull the covers off. He'd get you out. He said it was time to get up and eat breakfast with him. I don't care if I had was on vacation. I had to get up at 5 o'clock. Have breakfast.
Eat breakfast with your granddaddy.
And it was fish and steak and potatoes and everything you could imagine.
Good hearty
very hearty breakfast. Yeah. And so that was his hour to talk, and he wanted company.
Yeah.
So he'd get you up. He'd bring his audience in.
He wasn't allergic to children, was he?
Oh, he loved children. In fact, he, well, of course, I was his grandchild, but even at 19, he still had me sit on his knee. You know, I was still his child as far as he's concerned.
Yeah.
Well, they don't fill houses and apartments for families.
No.
Everything's too small. They're just for couples.
Yeah, just for the papa and mama and dad.
Maybe a couple of kids.
Mm-hmm. Couple of kids.
Well, that's one thing I've kind of enjoyed about over at the ranch. We did have room enough to put extra people, and we do in town. A lot of people say, well, your family's going to grow up. Well, always hope to have someone extra around.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Miss Pierce come and stay with us. She's going to come and stay. She loves to can.
Yes,
she just, she wants to come help
she's
me put everything
get here
up.
Just in time to put up the peacock.
Peas, and she's going, Carla's not going to be home this summer. She's going to France. And, I happen to pick up pickles. Carla's my daughter, oldest daughter's my pickle putter up as well. And she and I spend about half the night putting up pickles in this one. Takes about half the night. And so Miss Pierce, she'll stay up that late too. She might be able to, but she's right in here with you.
When you're up that far, you don't need much sleep.
She'll help me put the pickles out.
Franz, what rattles you so that she can't talk about your granddaddy? If you go down there to the first aid class and see those youngsters not listening and all like that, will that get you rattled? What do you call them, pre-meds?
Volunteers are the ones that I work with now.
Yeah. Will that get you rattled?
Not fishy.
Well, what gets you rattled so that you can't talk about granddaddy?
Just too many things going on, too much pressure. I have to, I've got too much organization in my mind at any one time, and so got too much going, that would.
Having to be at school.
Too many places, too many time schedules.
That'd be during the week.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get to get harnessed up.
Right, when I'm committed, you might say, to too many things, that would. And some days it's six things to do and you have to be there on time, and that sort of fastest you're thinking.
So if somebody come around, you wouldn't have much time for them, would you?
Well, I'd have a short time. I think if I had an hour and I knew that I could leave at that hour time, I could talk to them. But if I thought it was going to be difficult to get away, I would be uneasy, being real honest.
Yeah, well, that's what you mean.
If it was someone I
thought. Yeah, that's the point of it, what rattles you. That's the thing. Because, you see, you can destroy these countries, the people in the countryside. You can destroy them. Well, all the Mississippi niggas have gone to Harlem, you see. They've been destroyed in part, I understand. They get in circumstances where they can't survive. So they don't have that old countryside manner that they did have.
Mm-hmm.
You can destroy.
Well, I've really tried to protect myself up there. I do like to do things. I like to create something once in a while, but I have to be able to produce something now and then. And so I do, I'm a one-shotter, and everyone knows it. I'm a one-shot girl. In other words, I had sounds like a not much thing, but a luncheon that I had to put on, and I want to do it better or a little different. And I didn't have to do it, but just have a couple meetings along. Well, I had a theater group from Santa Fe that turned out to be just as clever as they could be, and it's something no one else would have risked, I don't think. And some of them would like it and some wouldn't, I guess. But it was all creative. They didn't use props or anything. It was all using bodily motion, and they used ideas or anything, and they could come up with a production right there before you.
Mm-hmm.
They were cute. Yeah. They could be in clever too. And I preferred that to someone just standing up there singing or playing a piece. And it sort of took them by surprise, because it was a sort of semi-formal setting, and they come on with their make-believe bus, actually, he's driving in. And they go into this line, she introduces them, and by that time they've scattered out. And she says, well, this is my imaginary curtain, and they're standing there. And she says, and I'll pull the cord. And these people just sort of back out like the curtain separating. Very much like Shakespeare would like people to do without a lot of props and all. And she goes on, just using them. And when she was ready to go, rather than just walking off like some people do, she says, well, it's time to go. But in between, they did some of the cleverest things you'd ever want to see. Well, they'll remember that, and I like to work on things ahead of time and do the artwork, and so I'll be pushed real hard for maybe a week or two, and then I'm through. And that's okay with me. I create something, and I want to do it real good, and then I can get through with it. But I don't like to take jobs that last all year long that push me steadily. I won't take those. And so I preserve my sanity by having periods of rest. Now that sounds funny in a way, but I have a month or two in there when I'm not pressured. Because if you're pressured all the time, it'll get through to you. I saw it get through to a couple of people that allowed themselves to take jobs that were real big and pushed them like for 9 months at a time, and they actually lost their personality.
Mm-hmm.
They were under such pressure.
Constant
pressure, and I think that's what alters people a good deal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Bertie had to get out from under that.
Same thing.
I took too many jobs for too long a time. Mm-hmm. All at the same time.
I think that'll do. You can push for a little while.
Yeah. Well, then
you're
relaxed. These were all two year
sitting under trees.
Mm-hmm. These were all 2 year things, and you can't handle 2 year pressure. At least I can.
Just, you understand what I'm
mm-hmm.
talking about. I think I would, if I had taken on too much when I went to town, and I did 1 year or so, and I could see myself sort of slipping into not seeing the birds or not being around people that I enjoyed or having the time. Like when I get gas, I always seem to get friendly with the gas station people for some reason, and not having time to spend a few minutes with them or whoever's around.
Florence, you never will admit this, but I'll try you once more. Now, what was the trouble when I got a hold of you and you started going up there to the university with me? You were tight about something or other.
Well,
it would be a long combination. I can't reconstruct it.
Jancy was pretty small at the time.
Jancy come along by then?
Jancy, when I first went to your class, Jancy was only 8 months old.
Well, she'd already arrived.
She'd already arrived. And when you have a small one, you have this constant pressure where you have to watch them, or you're having them meet schedules all the time. And you don't have a chance to be creative or to think or to be free. Just the same as with this club activity. If you're around small children, you'd see that. And I was really looking for an escape, a chance to have some input, because everything just outgoes.
Yeah.
Everything.
Yeah.
And it just takes all of your energy, it takes all of your time, it takes all of your
attention.
And
you were hard to live with over there.
And I get very frustrated if I can't occasionally produce. If they produce something,
you
have
get
some
frustrated,
kind of input.
You get mean like other people.
Sometimes. And as long as I can use that energy up, and to think a little bit. Well, I know I'm not a thinker, and you've told me this before. I'm not, what you call it, not thinker. What'd you put it? I'm not mental. Yeah, I know I'm not mental, but I have to think once in a while and have some kind of input occasionally.
Well, let me see.
And that gave me a lot. So, it's hard for you to realize, but I can go to class And you would give these ideas and things, and I would read, and it was 4 o'clock in the morning when I did most of my reading, to be sure. But during the day, when I'd have to walk, you're so many hours of a small child that you don't do anything but walk behind them, because they're getting into so much danger. You can't read anything, you can't sew, and you can't do anything.
You can read instructions. And but that's one of her imaginary things. You see, you can turn them yarns.
No, you can't. But you know, if I had something to think about.
Brent came over there one time. I was over there, and he come over there. He was wearing her, and he come over there and get me to tie a shoe thing. I said, "Hell, Brent, go tie your own." You know what she did? She come over there and tied it. Now that's what your mama said, and she just said, "I think that mama business is what got her."
Well, I think
that's
it did.
Time, huh?
But if I needed a little chance to expand something, but after I could go to class and I get an idea, you know, you'd ask about it, think about it, and then I'd read something, and then when I was pushing that everlasting stroller around the yard and sitting out there in the sand pile, they do eat strange things and get choked on them, and you do have to watch them when they're small. But I could think about it. Take the ideas. Or if I'm pushing the vacuum cleaner, I could think about the idea.
Here's one thing you don't take into account. I learned this in October of 42 when I went into the service. I went in with a math instructor there at the University of Tennessee. We both went to OTS, Officer Training School. See, we were overage in grade and too old to be buck private. And this fella, Russ Provine, he was a sort of a dismal looking fella, sort of like he had eaten a sour apple, and never said anything much or anything, self-contained. And you know, the first time it ever came out was down there. We went to all those classes in the barracks, and then when we'd take a test, everybody else would be working on it, and Russ wouldn't. And he'd make an A, and the rest of us was about to get by. You see, he had that auditory memory. He could learn, you see. I can't learn through the ear, by and large, you see. I'm sort of a prisoner of the written word. Well, she can do both, but she does the oral. She does her ear, you see. There's no doubt about it. That's a great advantage, you see. They don't know just what advantage they have when they do something like that. Mm-hmm. Lord help us! I have to take my whole dictionary and all my paraphernalia around with me.
That comes back, I guess, what goes on with craft. When I know a lot of people who say, "Show me, and I'll know how to do it." And other people don't want to be shown. They say, "Show me the book, and I'll find out how to do it."
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Like learn by doing, or just learn by reading.
I can't. It doesn't do any good for anybody to show me. It looks so easy when they're showing me, but I won't be able to do it.
Now you see what enabled you to hold on to this with the world changing as much as it is. You see, these gifts that you have are just, they've been discarded. You see. All educated people discard these. They don't want them. They don't, of course, they don't know what they are. Well, for one reason you could do that is, you see, you still, all the time you were out here, you see, you were, half the time you were over at the restaurant there, and Beatty was there, and he was as much in the countryside as anybody, and it had all those fellas, old James, Jim Means, and all of them, you see, come in there, and they all want to work for him, you see, and give him a little status to work for Mr. Rogers. And but Mr. Rogers was also, he was a buddy of the prince of all the countryside, you see, old Tuck Mack. Tuck is, he just has a lyric genius.
We went out to see him today.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and his birthday was the same day as mine. And I forgot to send him a birthday card. And I sent him a belated one that was real humorous. And he sent word back to me that he got my birthday card, but he didn't get his cake. So I'll have to bake him a cake. I guess he's still looking for it. That was way back in April.
So now that would account in part for you staying in track like your granddad and you. Mm-hmm. And then you see, by hook or crook, I got onto the theory of it, and so that egged you on to making your children report when you might have abandoned it.
I would have. I tell Guy all the time he doesn't realize what a help he was, because they will come in now to report. You know, just like they're full of it, they've got to come in and they'll sit down, and after dinner they'll sit there for an hour to 2 hours at a time and talk.
And that's
they all will.
Yes, to the great misery of their daddy. And the misery is that he wants to do the talking himself, you see, and he can't.
He doesn't want to listen to him.
He ain't a listener, is he?
No, it's really funny. One night, Dal went to was invited to this revival. Dal's a serious sort, you know.
He got a sort of light in his eye.
Yeah, several times. He had been two or three times with a friend of his, and that night he was just full of it. I was upstairs in the office. I have a little sewing room office, and I was typing something up there. And he went bound. His daddy was standing right there, and he walked right past. He didn't say hello or anything, and bounded upstairs and went into the room to talk to him, because he had to tell me about his experience. And his daddy's nose was so out of joint, it was unbelievable. He said he didn't even say hello. And he came out there and talked my ear off for about 2 hours. But it's because I've always, you know, if they have someone that's always going to listen to them, they'll come.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Being able to be a good listener is nice to you.
I talk an awful lot, but when they're talking, I
don't
too
much. You don't talk
too much.
You didn't out here.
I listen to them pretty much. So.
You seem sometimes like you talk a lot, but you didn't really.
But they like reports, too.
I could see.
From me. And he thought I was wasting away down at the bookstore, you know, working out there. And, well, I really was doing watching people and different things. And I come home, Brent, the first thing he says when you walk in the door, okay, what did you see today? What's your report for today?
Oh, really?
And I would have to report. They always want to know what I see at the bookstore.
Yeah.
Is that right, Brent?
Yeah.
And so they always know when I'm working, and they want a report.
Yeah.
Report time.
Well, you see a lot of things in a bookstore.
You
sure
did. Yes, but it's not worth
it.
Yeah, like
something no pets that Pam carries them. Somebody walked through with a big German Shepherd now.
that'd be a dangling.
You see, they just like Miss Mary, she doesn't know when she's out of her element, and she'll take this fly-by-night trip, you see, to Moscow and the Kremlin and all those things, you see, and just talk your ear off on things that you don't know anything about. Fanny is worse still than that. She's a free sister. She'll do that. She won't talk about ordinary things that she knows about. And Lord help her, she knows her son. She's into things all the time. And she can talk about them, but she don't want to. She wants to talk about the Kremlin. Well, why do I want to hear Fanny talk about the Kremlin?
Well, God, you have to settle all these big international problems before you can get around to doing anything.
I wasn't too impressed with the Kremlin. I was impressed with my feelings one night on the train of a bad 1940s movie. It was the small things that impressed me, and it wasn't what I saw. It was a funny experience.
Now I still haven't made contact with your neighbor over here.
Mr. Dedrick?
Yes.
Pa Dedrick's gone back to Tennessee.
Yeah, Ms. Dedrick. She collected a half a dozen or so of her Farm Bureau newsletters and left them down there for me. But I haven't been able to get in touch with her over there. She's always got something.
Well, you know, she belongs to that Methodist women down there in McIntosh, and they cater for the Lions Club dinner.
Sure.
so they're busy cooking half the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
oh, really?
They feed all those people. I know Miss Lois was telling me she went down there one day to Ollie Huss, and here were all these women sitting around a great big circle selling tea, and she says, "What in the world's going on here?" Then she realized they were all Methodists. Yeah, Methodists and Baptists down there in Margaret Dodge, and they were all had gone into the fields and had gotten all these teas and were shelling them to freeze them for their Lions Club dinners for the rest of the year.
Oh,
how about that? And Marguerite's in on that. That's the way they make a lot. They make a lot of money that way.
Yeah. Well, I went through those things, and there's a good many things I can talk to you about. I talked to her a few minutes on the telephone. And the thing she likes is personalities. She likes to do those little personalities. They don't amount to much because the paper just doesn't have place for much, you see. And it's a Farm Bureau thing, and it's pretty low ceiling. And if she knew a whole lot, they wouldn't want to hear about it. Well, we got into one thing. You see, what I do is cut through what she does in order to get into it. You know how that is. And she had this fella, she had two pictures on. One of them, she puts his right straight up, you know, made him look awful. And they ought to have show people on here, you see, just up to close. They ought to give you a little, as you know, at least get off across the table. And anyway, and then she had one, and he's on the tractor. And they were, what, good Lord. Well, she said he wanted that in because he wanted it understood that he wasn't one of them death farmers. He was an old dirt farmer.
He was no dirt farmer.
And I said, you didn't put that in. I didn't read that. She says, well, some things you just don't have to, you just don't put in because the majority of the Farm Bureau people are death farmers.
How about that?
Well, you see, that was an opening to get into things, to see what she saw and that she couldn't put in, and then look for some little organ that would contain it. But you see, you know how you do. You just sort of take an easy jaunt like that. If she wants to pick it up, it'll be all right. Not, it's all right, and you got no questions. You don't ask any questions, so nobody's duty bound. You see, you
but she's real flexible. You find it easy to talk with her, work with her.
I can't get over there. All I can do is talk to her for 4 or 5 minutes on the telephone.
I see her pretty often.
Yes, I know you do.
You have to come to my house. I see David too. Young David's always stopping by the house.
Yeah.
And then Big David has to pick him up. So
on the way home.
On the way home. They're thinking of having a group gathering at our house this summer, so they tell me. They'll bring all the children, and Marguerite, I guess, and Judy are going to have some crafts for the ones that don't want to swim, and those who want to swim are going to do that. And I told them they're welcome now. And they'll have a couple afternoons a week up there. Swimming and, you know, they've already had some things in mind to make.
That's up at PD's.
No, it's up at our house.
Town.
They're coming down.
You have a swim pool in town, too.
We have a smaller pond. Ours is in the jungle.
It came to the house.
It came with the house.
We had a big hole in the backyard, which is the neighbor's front yard.
Excavated back there, and there's a lot of trees. It's real dense back of our house. Of course, town it is. That's why we have coons and possums on the patio and armadillos on our patio.
Yeah.
Too.
Not too many armadillos. Most of the possums on the patio and eating loquat trees.
Got no coons.
Not the garbage.
Going to
be that.
Is she from East Tennessee?
Knoxville.
She and David Bull.
Right.
Well, let me tell you.
Near Doc.
David has that mountain intelligence, and he's got it in a high degree. I don't know how he survives on this other stuff, and he's a technical man. You see, on the telephone company, troubleshooter or something. You got to know a lot on this electronic telephone now to be a troubleshooter or even lay a line. I didn't talk over it.
Yes, sometimes.
Well,
PK got dog 9 to get out of the university exchange. They can talk to somebody outside of university.
Yeah. He's got this cycle. And we were interested in hunts. And I knocked my mail off one night and I couldn't fix it, and I went over there for a fine sense of a car center thing out there, a little thing to drill
it. To
let the blood out, and then it was easy. And he did it. He had a hand for it. And while he did that, he was telling me a bad story. Well, I wasn't interested in the bad so much. I was interested in this fox and cat hunting down here, bobcat hunting. But he told it. You talk about stringing it out. He put in everything, and he must be like gifted, because it takes a pretty gifted fellow. You see, I've had to deal with a lot of people that are really not gifted. I mean, the gray matter. You see, Mr. Weaver's not what you call a bright man. He got interesting. You see, I'm indebted to him and all like that. But this fellow, he could do almost like you do. You see, he could stop him and give him a suggestion, he could go right ahead.
Yeah.
And he still got that faculty. And it's unimpaired. And I don't know how it happens. And his daddy's 80 years old, comes down. I haven't seen him, but they say he's the same sort.
He used to work for Alcoa.
Yeah.
Signed the building.
Mm-hmm.
But he wasn't as large. He's
a little man. Well, you know, David just had a promotion not long ago.
Yeah.
And
that's where it's tying out.
That's where it's tying out. You know, it doesn't look like David either. Too much. It hasn't really changed him very much. He sort of has a new role he plays, you know. I'm David at work with the town, and then when I get home, I'm my same old self.
Yeah.
And he goes back.
On 24-hour call.
Right, he goes on back. But that 24-hour call sort of putting the bee on him. Not as bad as the doctor.
Yeah.
That's that steady person.
Yeah, but can't get away from it.
When he goes down the other town, they can't touch him.
When he goes down there fishing, they have a little house down there.
No telephone.
They have telephone down there, but they don't
hang it off the hook.
They just don't answer.
You ever read anything?
Yeah, I still pick it up now and then and read it. Especially when I have that vacuum, that infernal vacuum cleaner up there, so I have to read something to kind of keep me going while I push it around 6 hours.
Yeah.
So I read a little bit, and then that gives me something to think about. Keeps me getting bored.
Now you haven't got in for Stephen Whitley yet. I'll have to give you a postgraduate course in that, or a refresher course. We'll get into that sometime.
Now I read Lil Perot now and then too.
Yeah.
I've had to help Dow a good bit, you know, some of his papers this spring. He's had so many.
Yeah.
And we had to go through of all crazy things for high school student existentialism, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And he is not philosophically minded, and so he he looks like the quiet lad, and he really is, except he was just about to take the typewriter into 6 parts one night. Got up and walked out of the house and back again, because he thought, you know, he wasn't too sure about that paper. He has to do this before he sit down and write. And I was just sitting there in the chair patiently waiting for him to come back. And he says, "Mama, this is really all pretty stupid." He says, "All they're doing is using that name as an umbrella for all these ideas they just want to throw around, because you really can't define it that well." And so I said, "Well, in that case," and so I had been reading while he was gone, and Kierkegaard and some of the others, and started. And so finally I came up with one idea, and I just gave him that one idea, and he says, "Well, that's just about the way I feel, and I think I can use that."
That's what
the paper, and he writes very well once he sits down, but he gets so upset. He says it's so I don't, he says, I know what I think. Why do I have to bother with all the rest of this? Why can't I just tell him what I think?
That's right.
And he gets so upset, so I spend a lot of my time upsetting him.
There's somebody in Mr. Lawrence's class, a couple of people, they had to write a paper on individualism. So they wrote a paper, something to the fact that on individualism we will not write this paper and get up and walk out of the room. A couple of people did that and got up and left.
There's always a few differences.
Well, that was their paper.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was wondering why they wouldn't use Emerson on that, you know, existential. We had that. I mean, you didn't cover it in class, but it's in his essays there. Why do you suppose they wouldn't cover anything in that?
Didn't know it, I guess.
I sent word to the instructor. I was wondering why they didn't look at Emerson a little bit while they were looking at all the rest of these people. They could have gotten more out of just a little bit of reading with him than they could have some of that other. I agree with Dal. Some of that other is really too far for high school students. Just a little far.
You know, I've never been able to understand what existentialism is all about.
Well, yeah, when you find out, you latch on to transcendentalism, and you're really.
You know, I think Dal was right. He's young, but he could see that all these different people had such different ideas, and they really weren't even similar. And yet they used the same title for all these people, and nothing matched. And he said it's just a term. It doesn't. You can't really put it into words. It's a term. And he gets real upset with things like that.
This is what you do in your tie. Just put them around this, and whenever you want to go to a place with a formal tie, you just slide it down. And
I don't know
where that got there. That looks like a tie.
I had to go back and read Emerson on that to find out what Emerson said. I thought maybe he was going to say it. But
I don't get far unless I've got a little Emerson in the background.
It seems like
he needs to be there somehow or other.
Well, after reading some of that other, I decided that's what I needed. So I had to get the essays out and take a read of that. So now and then I do. And a lot of things that I had in class come to mind. I know, like, the turn of the screw especially forever come into mind. I saw that happen again with Carl and his auction business with the Lions Club auction. You'd probably, Brent doesn't want to understand what I'm talking about exactly, but Carl loves auctions, and he's the biggest.
Oh, yes, he loves auctions. He's bad Mr. Easton.
The biggest, junk thing collector that you can imagine. And for years, you know, right at first he didn't catch on to this, but every time they'd have an auction down there, McIntosh said, practically send him an engraved invitation, at least two people were calling, and he thought he was built up his ego, you know, because he thought they were just wanting him to go. Well, of course, they really wanted his money, as well as they wanted him, both, I'm sure, but they thought that he would buy these things, and sure enough, I know one time we were trying to move from the ranch, and I was just desperately trying to get the things cleaned out and be ready to move. And he was going down to this auction, and I looked out the door, and they came up with this truck, and it was piled up to the top. And I had been throwing out for 1 month, and it had such clever things as the old mailboxes from the original post office in Nicanope. McIntosh, you know, that Lois Dixon, who's now close to 80, his father's box, you know, so it was a little old. But anyway, all these things, well, he would keep buying all these strange things. Well, this time he went down there, this makes about 5 years ago, and they were after him. Oh, what's her name, that auctioneer, that girl? I can't, Lita, or what's her name?
Angelica
was down there. But they kept saying, hey, Doc, don't you want to buy this, you know? And they were kind of after him, and all of a sudden it dawned on him that they were after him. Well, so he left. He got turned off, and this was for the first time in about 5 years. And he left, and he stayed away a long time. And then he went back and at the very last bit, they had this really a pile of junk. I mean, a pile of junk. And they said they'd sell it all to him for $10.
And so couldn't
resist it. After he had thought he had defeated them on this other, you know, by leaving. And so he bought this pile of junk. And then they laughed, of course, and then they put, he doesn't know it, but I was over at church and Walter said, yeah, he bought that pile of junk, and after he left, we put all the rest of that stuff on top of it. And then they, these old things, you can't imagine what. So then he went down there, and he had this pile of stuff that was formidable to even get rid of, like old couches, thick mattresses, and
you can't pick up
some of that for about 100% profit. Springs, mattresses, beds.
And chairs. You just can't believe the array of things that he had. And so he considers his time so precious. And what did he do but have to go down and spend his whole Sunday disposing of that junk and ending up cleaning up all of the Lions Club's mess for free.
I didn't know you.
And
know
it was
that
just like
got
the governess in history. It came to him. It came to him. What has happened to him?
It did.
And I thought that
he'd been had.
Straight out of James. Straight out of James. But I didn't dare tell him.
Malicious, you see.
He's listening to me, and he's heard the story, but he hasn't heard the James version of it because I was sitting there just watching all of this unfold, and I thought the screws, I could just see it just turning, and then this illumination, and when he got that illumination, though, it was shattering, absolutely shattering, and I will not tell him about that. My interpretation of this whole event, I just didn't say a word. I really didn't say a word, but my mind was going like,
Come in here and tell us something. Oh, you did?
All by yourself.
Yeah.
Oh.
That horse.
Oh, she's a smart horse, isn't she?
Yeah.
I must walk away with
Did you have a halter on her or something?
I had a halter.
Yeah.
If it wasn't, I don't think she could find a halter.
Oh, is that right?
You need the bathroom, Nancy?
No.
Okay.
No, I didn't know your daddy ever found a market for that.
Well, they had to do something with the stuff. They had so much of it. And this old colored woman came up.
Oh.
Didn't she, Ben?
Yeah.
You could tell him. You were down there.
Oh, and she said she just there from a wedding. All sorts of stuff.
She's poor?
Yeah.
And so she bought that old couch that was half broken down. And what else?
And paid money for it?
$2 or something.
Yeah. It's good. Well, chair
profit, you know?
Did he have to move it for her?
Yes. He had to deliver it down to her.
Daddy didn't deliver it. Dow and I.
Oh, Daddy got somebody else
to do that. But he had to go down there the next day. And what was even more ironic was he ended up with the same four chairs that we had left at the ranch that belonged to Billy Richardson. And they ended up down at the auction.
Somehow.
As Sal said, the same old blue chairs with a sandpaper finish. Because one time I was painting those chairs and I knocked over a can of the blue paint and it was sandy on the back porch and I just got that sand and paint and all and painted those chairs and for the first time it stuck. They're always rough. But he finally got...
I never sat in those chairs.
Yes, you did too, lots of times.
In the kitchen?
In the kitchen.
You sat on.
And
he
wound
up
with those chairs.
Those four chairs. And I don't know what it was, but they came to some end point down there, and they ended up in the fire.
Oh, he got
he
mad.
Just,
he's burning
it. He got mad and just burned it all up.
Got
I was sort of sad about those four chairs going up in smoke.
Yeah.
I'd have kept those for old time's sake.
Yeah. They would have graced a lot of kitchens.
They were still in good shape, and why
yeah.
he burned those, I don't know, but he
yeah.
said we had to get rid of something.
Yeah.
So we ended up with another stranger there.
He
at
didn't
home.
Want to have to haul it.
No, but we still ended up with quite a few strange things at the house. You know, there was a truckload, and there was a pile down in McIntosh, a pile at Mr. Dedrick's.
Oh, really?
And then a wagon full out there in the back. Just a lot of things for $10. All that for $10.
And they just piled it up afterwards.
After he left. And if he knew that Walter told me that and gave a great big bed laugh, he'd just kill him. Don't you care, Brent?
That was pretty cheap way of cleaning out the place, wasn't it? So
he was done in.
Only ten.
But what was so funny
bucks.
Is he
yeah,
did
he
himself. But you know what? He did himself in. did himself in.
We are the ones that usually do that, aren't we? We do ourselves.
Okay, I will.
We got a couple of aunties in there.
I think that's funny.
Big boxes of junk and stuff.
It wasn't funny to move. I was sitting there laughing all the way.
What tickles me?
Oh, but he came out $5 a head on that. That purse. Yeah, won $10 in the purse.
Except a whole day's labor.
Yeah.
To dispose of it.
A little bit more than $5 a day.
That's it.
I
haven't
been paid
for
that either.
And he was still working at the end of the night.
Keep bringing that up.
No.
Isn't that something?
I'll threaten Mama to get her to pay me, and I'll tell Daddy.
Okay. Well, to see it. But the revelation was the thing. You know, when you realize what had been
in the dawn.
In the dawn. And now I wonder what will happen next year.
You go back.
It's like being a professional gambler.
Or gambler, being a gambler.
Stay away from it. And we have a son who's addicted to them.
Oh, you do?
And he brings home the weirdest. Yeah.
But he can't bring home much, though. He can't buy much.
He can't, and he always buys iron stuff, so that's a little hard to you know, any old piece of iron.
So does Carl. He buys any kind of piece of iron. We have a forge in our backyard.
Yeah.
Well,
that's
the
sort of thing that Donald would be
interested
in.
That's the kind of stuff Donald brings home.
Of course he uses
old
forges.
Tools, old
well, we have an old forge they built over at the ranch, and when we went to town, we had to find a place in town that would permit this sort of thing. So we're right on the end of Bivens Arm next to the agricultural field, parent station, and one house, right? And we're zoned agriculture. So even though we're not too far from town, and we built a pole barn, we are still building a pole barn for 2 years now, on the back lot. And this house is the forge.
Mm-hmm. Metal lathe, wood lathe. All sorts of
boys,
wood
house.
Tools, wood, big woodworking vibe, metalworking.
Do you use them?
Yeah. Industrial Ray Armstrong has run on 220 volts. No, 500 gallons of past it. Air compressor.
Those are the things that Donald was.
They made their forge. They used the bottom of an old, the bottom of it's an old safe, you know, that had been blown up at one time.
Mm-hmm.
It's very dirty. And then Mark Christensen over here gave them an iron tractor rim, and they filled it in with that brick, fire brick.
No. We poured about that much concrete in the bottom of the piece of pipe coming up right through the middle.
Mm-hmm.
They had to come up. They made a firebox and put brick around that.
A blower, hand blower.
You use, you don't use bellows.
No, they have a hand, this is one you turn and
crank.
And they've collected tools here and there and everywhere.
Yeah, all sorts of
anvils and things, and so they're really pretty well.
What we know is lack of swimpy.
What's that?
Making rod diameters. And
oh.
Making, like a.
Drive it through the
hole. You stick it, put in the metal and hot metal in one of on the bottom, stick the top and on it, hit it, and it'll make a shape in it. Like some of them go, it tapers down and back out, make a little knob and it goes back down.
Yeah, I see that.
So they have a lot to do out in our backyard. We might be in town, but there's plenty going on still.
Well, now, I tell you, nowadays, that's very useful because it's hard to get people to fix things, especially things that require welding or blacksmithing.
There is good welding. Some place in Nashville, just we had to get a extra cone put on our trailer, the trailer. Our cone, but got a razor hitch coming down, comes out, got a piece of metal that goes like an L, and it's got a ball on it. It was welded up to the other one. The man got in there, looked at the bottom of the truck board that says tap the hammer. Hey, it's solid. Once then, most of them hollow. Had a winch on the back of it.
Well, it came in handy too. You could lift up everything.
Yeah, we took an 800-pound air conditioner from Gainesville to Micanopy on the back of the truck.
Did you pick it up with a winch? Did it?
Dragged
it up?
They dropped it on the back and had a little bit of trouble getting it off.
But we did get a lot of things off with
now
it.
Now you can get that with a winch, you know.
Hello there. Have
a
seat.
Fine.
It has soaked with orange juice right here.
Oh, you with orange juice. Off the air.
No wind.
I've been writing, and that pen got on me.
Have you been out in the yard?
Yeah, I've been out in the yard so far. She's so interested in the horse.
Seems like these little girls all get addicted to horses.
Don't they,
though? You'd think it'd be the boys.
Don't
the cowboys, John Wayne complex or something, but...
Well, the boys, you know what Barbara said? You knew our Barbara, didn't you?
Yeah.
She says what happens to the boys is that they'll stay with the riding until they get their driver's license, and then they want to handle more horses than just one. It's the cars that take them away.
But so many little girls are using around 8 and 9.
Yeah.
Going to room.
About the third grade.
Yeah. They fell.
That's the third grade.
And things.
When they stop.
I might ride horse quite a bit. Don't do it. Never have. I can't do it much.
Do you? What do you use? Western?
I've ridden most of the Western stuff. Not just in the years.
We used to have one over at the ranch that belonged to Mr. Richardson. It was a strange saddle. I guess it was made in Argentina, but it was sort of a half breed. It wasn't absolutely flat like the English saddle, and yet it didn't have a pommel on it like a Western, and it wasn't cupped in the back. It had English back on it, and it was flat. And then in the front, it had, and the sides of it were made like an English saddle. But in the front, it had just an elevation that rocked up.
Is that the brown, the tan, or the black?
That dark one,
And we had a Western.
We used double reins, so.
You had your own horses.
We did have two at one time.
One died either spider or any could Larry. But one, there's a large one that died first. But it was not afraid of snakes at all.
That can be dangerous for him not to be afraid at all.
They found a curl snake right out between his legs when I ran the dog, wasn't it? They're pretty brilliant and hard to lose.
Curl snakes are bad medicine.
Those horses take a lot of care. You don't realize how much care they do take, do you?
We really do have to kind of look at it.
We've
now,
never
you
owned
can
one.
See the sore now. I mean, that's where I feel. Kind of washed them.
Well, now, Bertie is, and Donald, every once in a while, try to put some pressure on me to put some cows or something on our place up the mountain. And I say, I'm not going to do it. I don't want any livestock. Take care of control. Once you get the livestock in, then you have to do what the livestock wants, not what you want.
That's the truth. All you have to do.
First time we met the cattle guy, it said, no, a cow means a veterinarian.
That's right.
Well, you know, they see, it's just like people see horses, and, you know, young girls or anybody
right.
else, and they're so glamorous.
Mm-hmm.
But they forget that you have to carry them. They
right.
have to be watered and fed.
And wash them down.
And wash them down,
them.
And
mm-hmm.
how much labor there is to make
right.
one they just never
feed them and chew them. And
they don't chew them not too much anymore, but Steve Pop worked on some kind of sheath come out with it's rubber.
Rubber sheath.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Three pumps for horses, how about that?
Brent said he'd like to have a horse.
Yeah. Kinda,
yeah.
And pound that's a little bit hard. They, I think
you'd have to put him on the mother.
And then my dad would have to take care of him.
Yes.
Right, I don't know whether he would look kindly upon that or not. Dal has just cows out there.
Oh, is it Dal's cows?
Dal has a couple of cows. Peppers and cows.
They're good looking too. We saw them, I guess they were his cows over on the other side of it.
You saw them yesterday.
Collard greens.
Yeah. My dad had some, and my older son helped him build a house up there
mm-hmm.
one summer. Worked steadily from mm-hmm. early morning till night. And so at the end of the summer, he asked if he would like to be paid or whether he would better have cows.
Oh, was that
and he chose cows.
Sure enough.
And his two cats, a brother, he gave him two heifers.
Uh-huh.
And his two heifers have had calves now.
He's in business now.
Right.
One of the cows pot gardens, he made a beautiful calf. Flash rug made a big, nice big calf.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know, I guess if Jancy brings enough pressure to bear, maybe my dad would get one, I don't know.
Oh, is he, Jancy can manage it. If anybody can, you think?
Jancy manages everybody.
Yeah. I know you.
Like,
I know you noticed.
For you.
I know what she's doing.
Okay,
hold
her hands.
We've already decided she's going to be next president of the United States or something.
What
she's doing, she has a campaign manager.
I hope she can do better than that.
Yeah, I hope so too. All right. I think we probably should be going along anyway.
You're like electronic salesman. Yeah.
I'll be out soon. Well, you'll have to come into town and visit us.
Yes, I would like to. And you know what I thought would be? A big patch of okra.
Oh dear.
Okra. You can't grow
we can't
okra.
Grow it because our nights are too cold. Mm-hmm.
He's picking peas starting this month.
Anyway, big patch of peas. A couple acres or more, it looked like.
Mm-hmm.
3 acres. Totally intense.
Yeah.
It's amazing how long his greens chase the bugs, but when
yeah,
they came in great numbers.
And we got some buggy leaves out there.
They
well,
were just gorgeous up until
is he really selling any now? Does he sell any now?
I don't know when they seem to be so peppered. It looks like someone's selling with a gun or something.
Oh, yeah,
kind of. He says he was selling, he told me the other day that he's selling 2 pounds of greens and 1 pound of meat.
All the protein anybody can want.
Right.
Yeah,
good deal,
guy,
he said.
Guy called him up and said that he bought some cars in town in the store and they were full of holes. He said, what's wrong with them? Or said something. And he said, they're supplying meat with them. And hung up the phone right after that.
Well, they were really beautiful until recently. They just seemed to, you know, like the locusts have descended or something. He's had a good thing going, so he can't complain.
It just didn't go far enough.
Didn't
any
go as long.
Longer.
Same thing happened with the okra. He had the most beautiful stand of okra in something like 6 months.
Oh, the okra, something happened to the
okra. And then all of a sudden, the nematodes hit it.
Uh-huh. Always something. You ought to be able to grow something that doesn't have a bug.
Oh, well, they say to grow marigolds in them.
In between collards.
I've never found that help very much.
Oh, really?
And they say garlic will keep things out, too. But
just keep people
doesn't seem to work on our garden.
Yeah. Yeah.
Marigold is supposed to put out a top and kill for me.
No,
it's not.
Yeah. Well, the peas will be beautiful for a while anyway. We can sure be enjoying.
They were good looking.
We didn't have.
Maybe you can get some
back
before you go back.
Are these black-eyed peas or?
Yes, the black-eyed
yeah
peas. He grew one crop of black-eyed peas last spring, and then he grew another of what's called purple knuckleball. Are you familiar with
that?
So the pod is just as purple as it can be, a dark, rich purple.
Mm-hmm.
And the peas are round and kind of light tan.
Mm-hmm.
And when you cook them up, they're sort of a coffee brown. And they go so much further than the little peas do. They're not as soft. They're a lot firmer.
Mm-hmm.
Make a real brown gravy on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a delicious flavor that improves as you reheat
every
them. You know, you cook a pot full
that's
and they're
right
good 4 days
that's
later.
Good.
Really
peas
good.
You,
know,
you talk
right
about peas down here, and I knew that they had to be different from what we're growing up in the mountains, because the first crop is always a pea crop, but it's English peas, not but I knew it'd be much too hot down here for English peas.
He planted some tomatoes and bell peppers this week too. He's gonna have cucumbers, so.
Oh, that sounds fun.
It sounds like summer will be a feast.
Sure does.
Yeah.
That's promise. Yeah, isn't it pretty up on that hill, though?
It is. It's a nice
view
down
at the lake. We'll have to find you a bathing suit so you can go up and take a dip. Now, we built that pool, you know, when we lived over at the ranch years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The pool's been there a long time.
Been there
long
enough.
Oh, much longer. Mm-hmm. It was there 3 years before the house. And then, you know, everyone in Evanston and all would go up there and swim. And on Sunday, sometimes we had 20 in the pool.
Community pool.
And we didn't have a bathroom or didn't have a place to dress or anything. The only thing that was there was just the pool.
Mm-hmm.
And you would see a plane come by sometime, and it must have looked strange because there's pasture in front and on both sides, you know.
Yeah.
You see the plane go, down, just take a look. And once I had this crew from PK Young that were working in the yard, you know, trying to help them out. Were you in the senior class? It was so hot, and I said, why don't y'all come over and go swim in the pond, swim in the pond?
Yeah.
And they thought I was joking. And so they went in their jeans and all, a bunch of boys. I took them over. And then later on, I looked at my daughter's annual, and this boy said, I'll never forget that freaky pool.
Because
it was out in the middle of nowhere.
Oh, my